You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm John Wellborn, and I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. Arash Soufiani.
Perfectly done.
It's taken me a long time. It's a work in progress.
I've gone from Arush to Amush. at the beginning, you just didn't know my name at all.
I'm not great with names. No. It takes me a while. Like, it's got to like beat into me a little bit.
As soon as you called me Soufiani, I was actually very happy.
Yeah. It's like a souffle. Yeah. It's a weird one. Man, I feel like we got a little string of these going. I'm pretty excited. We got some questions to work through.
Yeah.
But before we get into it, you had a big change of life.
Yeah.
Big deal. You took a trip and you got engaged. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'm glad she said yes. She let me cook for a little bit. So I don't think I've shown you the video yet, but I get down on my knee and I propose to her. And she stares at the ring box for literally a minute and 15 seconds. And she's just looking at the ring, looks at me, looks at the ring, looks at me, lets me cook there. And at the end, she says, "Are you sure?" And it was, I was like, just get, yeah, I'm just going to pack up and go home. Right. But when she finally said yes, it's like, yeah, dude, I've literally been stewing on this for 6 months. So
you are a planner.
Yeah.
I mean, you put it all in. I mean, and you went all out. You guys went over to Stockholm, got to go visit Yucky and some of the boys and got to see the beauty that is one of my favorite cities in the world.
Yeah. I definitely think that if you get a chance, you got to head over to Stockholm. That place is just an amazing city. It's gorgeous. It's clean. I mean, for any English-speaking foreigner, it's easy. Everybody speaks English there.
Yeah, so, and speaks English well.
English well, yeah. And can even catch a little bit of like the American slang too. So be careful. is all I'll say.
I always feel that it's a little insulting that in America, we don't know anything about anybody else's culture.
Yeah.
You know, we're so siloed in so many ways, but you go to Stockholm and they're current on what's happening in America. They speak English. They're up on the fashion. It's like we live in this little bubble microcosm. And when you go out in the world, you realize that America influences a lot of the world. And just the fact that you can go to Stockholm and everybody speaks English extremely well. And I mean, to the point where they can like joke and, I mean, it's not like, oh, just a working English. They all speak English very well.
Yeah. I think it's actually kind of embarrassing if you're American, you go over there like, fuck, I didn't learn about anybody else. Yeah. I've only got one language.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'm the coolest. Like, I'm sure we're the number one exporter of cool, you know, for sure. But at the same time, I think we got to step up our game and get out a little bit more, or maybe interact more with our own communities and figure out where everybody's coming from, because we are the melting pot. So I think we have a duty to spice up our lives a little bit.
Did you also notice how tall everybody is?
There wasn't a person I met that was under 5'8".
Yeah. Like even the girls.
Even the girls.
Yeah. Like the guys and the girls are all kind of similar size.
And nobody was dressing sloppily. There was no like pajamas and Crocs in the streets. Everybody was wearing like the most casual thing you saw were jeans and hiking shoes. But even then, everybody was so well put together and the food is so good. I don't think right now we're doing this like little fitness challenge, trying to see who can get the leanest. John's got a little cross bicep vein going on. He's gotten super lean. So I was kind of worried going on this trip that I was like, oh man, I'm going to fall off a little bit. But no, the food's really good. You're walking all the time, or you're taking Lime scooters, and everything's pretty close by if you stay in Stockholm proper. So I had no problems just eating a bunch of shrimp and pickled herring, which is delicious.
They do have some cool foods, and Swedish meatballs are not just something that the Swedish chef makes. And I remember the first time I visited, when I heard them speak Swedish, it sounded just like the Swedish chef to me. And I started laughing. You remember the Swedish chef from, it was Sesame Street.
Yeah, no. Sesame Street. That's right.
Yeah. And we went out, and I remember the first night we were there, they took us out to this place that said, ah, this, you know, amazing food. And so I asked, you know, what should we have? And they're like, the Swedish meatballs. And I was like, shut up. Like, I thought they were trolling me. And they're like, no, you have to have the Swedish meatballs. Like, this is a big deal. And they brought them out, and I was expecting these like monster, they were like these little tiny ones.
Yeah.
And they were excellent. The food was excellent. I remember Yaki and Johan took me to this like very traditional Swedish place that was all like fish. And they brought out this like massive seafood tower, and it was like pickle herring and like all of these traditional Swedish foods that like you might not ever find at a restaurant, and definitely no American would ever eat.
Yeah.
And it was like these little crackers, and putting it on, they had like, you know, five different types of smoked salmon and different fish. And it was, it pushed me outside my comfort zone just because I, you know, we're not really exposed to a lot of that kind of like that pickled traditional stuff, but yeah. It was a good experience, and they had a lot of great white wine, and I'm not necessarily a white wine drinker, but we drank it.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite food happened to be Skagen. It's like they take a bunch of shrimp, like little shrimps, and they stack them on this like little piece of toast, and they have kind of like a, not like a mayonnaise thing, but something of the consistency of potato salad on it with like a bunch of dill on a piece of toast. Mm-hmm. And that was my favorite thing to eat. I ate that like every single day, like at least once a day. I had this little Skagen thing, and it's a bunch of shrimp, so it's pretty low fat. And if you get it without the potato salad thing, it's actually really good. Fits your macros, bro. But yeah, I got to hang out with Yoki, who's like a power athlete OG.
Yeah.
And man, that guy's lived a life. He was talking during one of our conversations over a little bit of grappa. He took me to one of his favorite like Italian bars that has like 20 different kinds of grappa. And he was talking like, yes, unfortunately, I'm sorry, but I am responsible for bringing CrossFit to Sweden.
Yeah. He was the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the Fighter Academy. When you went there, you continued to train obviously to stay in shape for our challenge, but also to jiu-jitsu. What was the feedback from the future significant other? Oh, you're training again, or you're not going to eat enough. Was there any pushback on any of that?
No, I think she knew that like I was going to do it regardless. So she's a ride or die in that sense. Mm-hmm. I think she was surprised that as soon as we got off the plane, I dropped the bags off and I went straight to Yoki's gym, Nexus Stockholm. Mm-hmm. I jumped right on the mats. She was really cool with it, even though it was like, it was pretty hot in that gym. You know, we just got on off a plane and she had to sit there while I trained ecological jiu-jitsu.
Oh, they're big eco guys.
Big eco guys.
Shoes on the mat?
Only Yoki.
Yeah.
Yeah, shoes on the mat, super Paraíba mode. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's a different thing. There's no real, where are the Brazilians at? The Brazilians aren't in Europe, you know? Not as big as maybe like the tropes that you see here in like the West and the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Of like, you got a bow, there's Helio Gracie everywhere, or
it's less like, tradition.
Less tradition, which is good and bad, right? I think everybody has a different way of doing things. Like for instance, like Japanese baseball is very strict, and those guys go out for like runs in the morning, whereas like American baseball, they're just like, oh, are you good enough or not?
Yeah.
Like, can you throw a fastball or not? So they don't necessarily make those guys run in the rain. But everybody has a different way of doing things, and I'm cool with it. But yeah, the significant other thing, that's something I wanted to talk to you about, because I feel like maybe it's not unique to me. Other people are struggling with it as well. But if you get really serious about your fitness and it starts to run into a little bit of your family life,
yeah.
Your married life, you could start to butt heads. Luckily, Mercedes, my fiance, she's she's a pretty fit person, and she's gone through waves of like being super serious about nutrition, things like that. So she knows how to support me. But there are some days where it's like Saturday morning, I'm like, all right, see you later, babe. She's like, where are you going, open mat? Yeah, I'm like, open mat's Saturdays. That's where I go.
Yeah, it's part of your deal.
It's part of my deal. I'm eating chicken breast and salad tonight. Like, that's just what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to get your feedback, because I remember a post that you had made was something like to the effect, and it caused quite a little bit of ire from the online community, which was just like, hey, if your buddy invites you out to a bar, have a beer.
If time is the enemy, Grindstone is your weapon. It's the most flexible training program in the power athlete arsenal. Built for boardroom warriors, sleep-deprived parents, students burning the candle, and athletes with their axe to the grindstone. Grindstone delivers high-impact strength training with minimal time demands. So when life gets chaotic, your progress doesn't fall apart. Consistent, efficient, built to keep you strong, lean, and resilient, no matter what's on your plate. Claim your 7-day free trial at powerathletehq.com/grindstone and take the fight to Father Time. No, it was, if your friend invites you to, or if a friend offers you a beer and the reason you don't accept it is because of some like weird diet restriction, like you probably need to rethink your life a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. Like how many times you get to share a beer with your friend? And it stemmed from, we were at an event on the East Coast, a CrossFit event, CrossFit football. And our host brought us to this kind of big barbecue and all these people were on some like weird paleo challenge. So they had a keg. And so the guy goes over and he gets a beer and we're having it and like nobody's drinking. And like he hands me this beer and I'm like, why the fuck you have a keg? So we're sitting around with a keg and it's having a beer and like nobody's drinking. And I'm like, what's up? I'm less curious of why people are not drinking now than I was, 20 years ago, let's say. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't having a beer, I'd be like, oh, you're not having a beer. How come? Just curiosity. And, either it's usually I had too many beers, 100's not enough and one's too many kind of a deal where I have a drinking problem.
Yeah.
Something else. So I just always would add, hey, why aren't you having a drink? And they were like, hey, I'm not going to have this drink because we're doing this paleo challenge and this isn't paleo. Mm-hmm. And they like went into this like whole deal. And I went back and I wrote that blog post that if you're at a party and a friend offers you a beer and the reason you don't accept it is because of some weird diet challenge, like fucking rethink your life. And a lot of people jumped in on that comment and were like, I have a problem with alcohol. And I'm like, dude, I didn't say if you have a problem with alcohol.
Yeah.
You have a problem with alcohol, don't drink. I don't want you to drink. I've been around people that have problems with alcohol that drink and they're complete assholes and I wish they wouldn't. But if the reason that I'm not having a beer when my friend pours it to me is because of some weird diet restriction, like rethink your life. Now, I didn't say you should fucking kill yourself or do anything like that, but just like rethink
it.
Like I had a situation, I took cash to go get shoes yesterday and Kate was like, hey, we're going to go to trivia night at this place called Hops in Time. So we go to this trivia night and which I actually crushed it, surprisingly. And the only thing that they have that's really decent there is a smash burger. And I was like, fuck, I really don't want it. I ate too much pizza on Sunday to like have a smash burger, but I ended up having a smash burger just because if I didn't, it would have caused a little bit of ruckus amongst everybody. I was almost tempted just to drop cash off and be like, all right, your mom's in there. I got to go home and cook because I needed to cook last night so I'd have food for today.
Yeah.
And I didn't get my cooking done. So I'm like foodless, lunchless until I go home and make something.
Yeah. I think the saddest part about those, if you go to a bar like that that makes smash burgers, is they'll usually have like a grilled chicken breast option, but it almost always takes 20 minutes longer.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. The only option they have is a deep fried, like a deep fried chicken sandwich. So with cheese, it's like a buffalo chicken, deep fried buffalo chicken, breaded kind of chicken.
No escape thing.
No, there's nothing. They have like a BLT. I mean, like there's no easy way out of this place.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, but they do have a gluten-free bun. They did have sauerkraut. They did have pickles. I didn't get cheese. I asked them for no fries, but they still brought me a massive plate of fries, which is you're eating the smash burger. You're like, fuck, I don't want to eat these fries.
Yeah.
I was up a little bit today, so I had to go fucking torture myself for about 35 minutes on the Echo bike.
What is it all for, John? Why do you torture yourself?
So what happened, and I'll just give you guys the Reader's Digest notes. One of our friends, Zach Evanesh, has let himself go. And on our group text with him and Wrestler Matt does nothing but just shell him all day. And we love Matt, Zach, but there's definitely a feeling of iron sharpens iron, mm-hmm. as one man sharpens another. You know, Power Athlete invented that slang, even though the Bible, it's in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So the suggestion was made, hey, would you guys do some like fitness diet challenge thing for me? So I went back, put it together, gave it to Arash. I said, hey, Arash, we're going to do this. He said, I'm in. He sucked in Marty, sucked in John Walsh, and a few other people. And we got Skutnik involved. So then it's Wrestler Matt. Wrestler Matt actually hit all of his weight. He actually hit his body weight, which I was pretty happy about him. But then he sent me a picture of him like crushing like a dozen beers. And I was like, how close are you to this? I'm like, the fact that you can crush a dozen beers and you still made your weight, I'm super jealous. Matt sent me a hilarious picture. He was in New York for work, and they, he does Bond. So they had to go out to a bunch of big dinners, and he's sitting at some, New York steakhouse ordering. And the guy that sits next to him, like they're sitting at the next table, is some like 400-pound Taiwanese dude who's just massive. And so the guy comes in and Matt's like, holy shit. Matt's a big dude. So he's, you see another 400-pound guy. Yeah. Matt's like 250, slimmed down, and starts getting into a conversation with the dude and just starts talking shit to him. And the guy's like, I only eat out at like the best restaurants. And I like basically gave Matt like a detailed tour of all of the steakhouses, what's the best cut and this. I mean, just like every night, 7 nights a week, this dude just goes out and slays the biggest steaks all over New York. Mm-hmm. And he's like, at this place, you get this and this and this and this. He said the guy sat down and ate an entire seafood tower by himself and a 40-ounce ribeye.
Holy shit.
And then two bottles of wine. And the dude was there solo, I guess. I think at least that's the impression I got. So, and then like, he basically gave Matt a rundown of all these things, but Matt took a picture and sent it to me. And he's like, look at this fucking dude. And literally the guy's in a collared shirt, just like huge Asian dude, just sweating.
Sweating in 68 degree steakhouse. Yeah.
And
what's that Monty Python bit of that? Like that really fat dude goes to the steakhouse and just eats himself until he explodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the way this thing started. And the deal was obviously body composition, but we each had to come down 20 pounds. So that's been the interesting thing for me, especially, which I really am kind of surprised on. I think what we did is we flipped, or at least for me, I flipped the switch too quickly. Mm-hmm. I think like we upped the energy expenditure. We started working out. We started doing the aerobic work, and we cut the calories too much. And I think that was a little bit of a shock to the system, because I lost weight and then I just stalled. And then I had to go back and kind of like, I'm under eating, not enough calories. And so kind of ratcheted up, kind of played with it a little bit. And then the weight started coming down. So
I think it goes to that idea that Ben was talking about on the podcast with you before, which was just because you're in a caloric deficit doesn't mean that necessarily that you have to hit lighter weights.
Yeah.
But I do think that mentally, it can be kind of taxing in the first 3 weeks to do the same kind of output, at least initially. And then I think you got over the hump and then your output came back up, and now you're too much of in a deficit.
Yeah. I think part of the problem too is we were doing a little bit of like carb cycling. Yeah. So it was like low, and then we went into like kind of like low, high. And I think with the high, I think it was fucked with my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
I definitely know how people can give themselves an eating disorder.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden I'm like 8 a.m, I'm planning out my meals and I'm super excited about what I'm going to have at like 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fucking creepy. Like I don't need to do this.
Yeah.
I need to just eat my bout. Like I need to figure out what my macros are, figure out my total caloric load, cut it all up and just eat intelligently and not like start like looking at it and be like, ooh, I get 350 grams of carbs tomorrow. I'm going to have this and this and this. And the other one, and I still haven't figured out exactly why this is the way that it is, but we ended up finishing the barrel sauna. So we started doing like barrel sauna every night. And all of a sudden, like I was like retaining water. Like I couldn't put on my wedding ring anymore. My like Aura ring wouldn't fit. My hands were super swollen and I was packing all this like fluid. And I ended up talking to Parsley about it. And he's like, well, it is a hormetic stretcher. He's like, how many, like, what have you been doing? I'm like, well, we've been doing it every night. He's like, how long? I'm like, 185, you know, for, you know, probably 20 total minutes. And he's like, dude, like too much, like 3 days a week is plenty. So backing it down, that actually was very, very helpful. And also was just fucking with my sleep too bad because we were doing it at night and then I just wasn't getting any deep sleep. And I think that was negatively affecting me too.
Yeah. I think it's awesome that we have the, I wouldn't call it necessarily a luxury because it is kind of like we're adding a bunch of suffering tools, but at the same time, we get to test all these things out. And then I think at the end of the day, what people need to know is that every aspect of, you know, your goal-oriented training, whether it's like tweaking the nutrition, tweaking the training, tweaking the recovery tools, like all of those add additional stress.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tale as old as training is that you got to mess with one factor at a time.
Dude.
It's like, hey, we got to mess with the nutrition first.
Yeah.
Then we can mess with the training. Then we can mess with the recovery tools and the sauna. It's like, if you do everything all at once, the body just does not respond.
No. And that's what happened to me. We were like doing this and we just went like, all right, we're going to up the training. We're going to up the aerobic work. We're going to do this. And I think what it did is it just put me into a little bit of flux.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm like eating a caloric restriction and my weight like completely rebounded. And that was a weird feeling. And then you got to take a look and you're like, all right, well, I'm going to stay the course. Right. And I need to make some adjustments. I need to be a little bit more intelligent. I need to not be so extreme in everything.
Yeah.
And then everything started kind of pairing in the right direction and moving. You just have to be consistent. I think what happens to a lot of people is they think, you know what? Like if I'm in caloric restriction and I'm, burning more than I'm taking in, then like I'm going to have this positive thing. I'm going to see it on the scale. And we've said it, you know, calories in, calories out. If you eat and you work out and you step on the scale and it's not in the deficit, then like, were you really in a deficit? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very easy math equation, you know, law of thermodynamics. But sometimes it doesn't work like that. Sometimes mm-hmm. you step on and you're retaining some fluid. And I think that's what was happening to me. And I was just feeling it in my hands. Like I just couldn't even get my rings on.
Yeah.
And that's where I felt. And then all of a sudden, like backing off the sauna a little bit, reducing a little bit of the intensity, especially on the zone two work. Just because I follow that Morpheus. And for me, it's anything under 149 is recovery. So I might end up riding between 140 and 149 pretty consistently. So I had to kind of back it down a little bit and just go for a little bit more duration, you know, and that ends up being around 450 calories on the Morpheus.
Yeah.
And then you look and you're like, all right, I'm at 2,500 calories. I'm at 2,000. I'm like well with, you know, at least 500 below my basal metabolic rate. Then you're adding lifting weights in.
Monday squat sessions and Texas heat.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, and I hate to kind of break this on age, but when I was in my 20s and my 30s, these equations worked pretty well.
Right.
Even in my 40s, I did. And now in my 50s, I had to be a little more intelligent. So I'm not in my 50s, but later 40s, just have to be a little bit more intelligent with how it goes.
Yeah. And this brings me to my next question. What do you think is going to stick from, the lifestyle changes you made since the challenge started? You know, what's going to stick? Is it zone two? Is it the sauna work?
Yeah.
Because we're not going to be in caloric restriction forever.
No. Yeah. So my biggest thing is I can't eat like an asshole, and not that I ever eat like an asshole, but what I end up kind of doing is, and I make a massive mistake on this. I kind of will like, I'll eat like a decent breakfast and then I kind of like pretty light through the day. And then around 6 or 7, I'll eat the majority of my calories. And I think the timing of that is not as good. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything, I tend to do better when I eat the majority of my calories up front. And, you know, the age old, like eat like a king, eat like a peasant later in the day. I think there was a guy that had a kind of a diet recommendations on that way. But if I eat too many calories late at night, I think it affects with my sleep, which wasn't the case for a long, long time. But because I started tracking my sleep and, you know, use the sleep, 8 sleep, I can kind of gauge it a little bit. Like I was giving an example, Cal Dietz, set me up with this guy's product. Hey, I want you to try this product. It's like a fermented apple cider vinegar from some orchard in like the Ukraine that's like organic and it's has some like amazing healing properties. And Cal's like, this stuff's incredible for digestion. It's great as a topical, especially for injuries, to remove swelling. So many, many years ago, when I was in college, we used to go see this kind of like hippie natural dude that kind of did a little bit of body work. But my knee was real swollen. So he took a wrap, soaked it in apple cider vinegar, put sea salt on it, like packed it around my knee and wrapped it up and then like, you know, cellophane this thing. And I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Well, about 3 hours later, he took it off and all the swelling was out of my knee.
Oh, shit.
So I was like, well, and I kind of like clicked that in the back of my mind. I didn't really think anything of it. And then Cal's like, hey, I want you to check out this company. I want you to check out these products. So he sent me a link, hooked me up with the guy. He sent me some stuff. And it's this like super apple cider vinegar that's got some D-amino. I'd have to look up all the particulars. I might have the dude on the podcast. So he's like, hey, I want you to do like 30 milliliters of this. And, you know, all of a sudden you like, you know, take this stuff and it's pretty interesting, like adding these different things. But I mean, that thing completely messes with your digestion. And like, there's always different things to try and different, you know, pieces for this. But I think as I've gotten into this, the one thing that's kind of the no-brainer for me is the zone two work. You know, yeah. I mean, you've heard me say for years, you know, two things happen as we age. We lose mitochondrial density and we lose the ability to recruit motor units. So the ability to recruit motor units in terms of lifting heavy weights, not going away. I think the interesting piece for me is, you know, on the Morpheus, it's somewhere between, it's like 167 minutes a week of recovery work is how much the Morpheus recommends. So for me, it's about 35 minutes, 5 to 6 days a week, I think is how it works. And if that's what I got to hit on my time, then I just got to hit it. So I just pop up first thing in the morning. I usually like to sit down, like drink some water, have a little bit of like salt and creatine, and I kind of chill out a little bit. And this morning I drank a coffee and I got on the bike and hit my 35 minutes, showered, and here we are for the podcast. And then I try to train either, if I train in the mornings, I'll do it later in the evening. On the weekends, what I'll do is I push it out and I'll do it like later in the evening. And then I'll get in the sauna right after. I usually like to ride for 30 minutes and get in the sauna. I feel like that's a pretty good one. So I'm not going to change the sauna. I'm not going to change the aerobic work. I'll go back to eating. I won't be so caloric deficit, but I know I also probably should look at calories maybe on like the course of like a week, which is how we do most things. Whereas, you know, hey, like here's like, you know, and I'll go get a BMR done and kind of figure out what my basal metabolic rate is and kind of go backwards into it and say, all right, I'll eat this many calories. And then I'll kind of do the math equation. But I would like to have at least one or two nights a week where I don't have to go to bed hungry.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of being hungry all the time.
Me neither. And I think going back on the carb cycling thing, it's really easy to carb cycle when the only stress you have is zone two and lifting. But then because my lifestyle has jujitsu in it, your lifestyle has jujitsu in it, that's kind of like the unknown variable, okay? Could have a good round, could have good rounds that day, could have really shitty rounds that day.
Well, I cut my jujitsu back to one day a week because...
you're a big Derek Moneybird guy. You think you're going to get a black belt from Victor Hugo doing that?
No. But as soon as this thing's up, I'll go back to 3-4 days a week. It's too much.
Yeah.
I was, you know, when I was rolling, like I went three times and I was so just, I wasn't able to recover. Mm-hmm. Like I needed to come home and like eat more. It was a lot of work. So I have to figure out a more intelligent way, whether it's less zone two work, or maybe that's a zone two work, or maybe even do that and then jump on the bike right after. I mean, there's gotta be a way, but I'd like to get back to going to jits 3-4 nights a week. I feel like, one day of jujitsu is not nearly enough to keep things warm.
Yeah. Yesterday I had a mother effer of a jujitsu training session with all the boys. And, I needed a cliff bar. Like I just needed a cliff bar. Like there's something that, I just had way too much output and I started getting dizzy and I'm like, dude, I still got to teach kids today. Still got to lift weights with John Philippe.
Yeah,
there are all these things that still need to get done. So, I think the averaging out the week is probably better for this kind of lifestyle. Whereas if you're only training and you're able to control all the variables of the output, like just lifting weights, doing zone two work, I think carb cycling could be very useful.
Yeah. you know, we've been training somewhere between 4 and 5, 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. I wrote an article for Sports Illustrated. There was a pretty convincing piece of research where they looked at people in caloric deficit that were, you know, dieting, and they had them train 3, 4, and then 6 days. The people that trained 6 days ended up losing no muscle. Mm-hmm. So there was this idea of like constantly stoking it. So we've been kind of subscribing to that. I think when this thing ends, I like going back to like the 3 day a week full body.
Yeah.
And like a kind of like a little bit of like more like post-activation potentiation, a little bit more jumps, a little bit more throws, a little bit more athletic, like less bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And I like that 3 day a week, which allows me to hit jits 3 days a week. And then I can get like my zone two work, which would be pretty easy just to get up and, you know, 5, 6 days a week, be able to get, you know, that 30 minutes in, and then be able to get the lift 3 days and then kind of fit jits. Training weights 6 days, 5, 6 days a week. Has really just kind of scuttled a lot of the time I've had to get to jujitsu.
Yeah, because we are constrictors.
Well, I got a wife, I got three kids, I got this fucking property, we got this fucking podcast that has to be done. Yeah. You know, obviously the SI stuff, and then everything for Power Athlete. So, I mean, there's just a lot of work that needs to be done. I mean, yeah, there's a shop with DJ. I mean, there's a fucking million things to do. I mean, we've got all this rain. I still got to go out and grade the road here for tomorrow.
It was a little bumpy.
Oh, man. Fuck, dude, that water, it wasn't bad. Like when all the, like the massive floods happened, we didn't take a really hit. It was actually last Sunday. We got like 6 inches, and where my neighbor's property is with the horses, they had a blowout. So like their property's a little higher than us. I don't know if you saw,
yeah,
but the water came through, blew out, and just blew out our road and like blew out everything. So I was kind of waiting for everything to kind of dry out because I got to go back and grade, but, it's just lifting that many days a week has cut into like my available time. But now that I just got an email, now that Six Blades is going to be opening a Bee Cave location,
ooh,
that means that I'm like 8 minutes away from potentially being able to go to jiu-jitsu. I could be like, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really excited about that.
Are you going to be a hand in that, or how?
Oh yeah. I'll be involved there. I mean, we moved one of our guys out here from the West Coast, Jason Hackett, who's a stud, and me and him are pretty much going to.
I just rolled with him for Philippe's. But yeah, Jason just came out, and it was we rolled, and then Fleet proceeded to just fucking beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, Jason's a stud, though.
Yes,
I mean, he won the Brasileiros.
Yeah.
That's impressive, dude.
And I felt like Philippe knows that and was like, okay, here it comes.
Okay, you beat everybody in Brazil, but in your category. I am another Brazilian. Like, can't let you have the win. Philippe will never let you have the win.
No.
Represent.
He will never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just when you think you're doing good, he's going to get you.
He softened up a little bit on me. He loves me a little bit differently now. But before, it was very much like, if I got one up on him, then he's got to get, it's like the Borat thing. Like, my neighbor get the color TV, then he has to get the color TV. Like,
oh no, it's the Shanji. He's like, oh, he gave me a Kimura, so I gave him 100 Kimuras.
Yeah. Lovato, when he did the Kimura, I said, okay. So I did 76 Kimuras on him. There are so many things, like people ask, like, when do I know my jiu-jitsu is good enough? I'm like, dude, there's so many alleys to this game. You know, it could be like become a specialist or something like that, or like you can challenge yourself in different ways. That's why it's,
I think the only way that you can grade your jiu-jitsu is how well you roll against some 16-year-old Brazilians.
So, speaking from experience.
So if you want to like check under the hood on how good your jiu-jitsu is like a guy in his 30s or 40s, like a hobbyist jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah.
Maybe a dad with kids, or, you know, want to be good at jiu-jitsu. You need to roll with some 16-year-old kids who just show up from Brazil, from San Luis.
Yeah.
And then check your jiu-jitsu against them.
Yeah.
And if you can hang and not get absolutely decimated by some 16-year-olds, you know your jiu-jitsu is pretty tight.
Yeah. I think you did. You told me like last week you got Lionel's son and Luciano.
Yeah.
Who came up under Six Blades Fort Worth.
Well, yeah, but Luciano is from San Luis.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's from Philippe's hometown ended up coming up in homeschooling for the last year up in Fort Worth. And basically Philippe was like training him like seven times a day. So Philippe's like, hey, coach, he's like, you come. So I rolled with these kids and they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Like the desire to not just try to like brutalize and just like physically assault them, you know, I mean, because they're kids.
Yeah.
But super good jujitsu all of
very
a sudden.
Very real threat of submission. Very real threat.
I had Moses in a good thing and all of a sudden he switched and tried to go deep half like his dad. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden he like, I saw him going deep half and I tried to do the little Lovato where you kind of like tuck. And he got me split out pretty good. So I had to roll out of it. And then the other kid, super flexible and really just really good.
Yeah.
So my joke is for most people, I'm like, you want to check under the hood for your jujitsu? Go find some like 16-year-old Brazilians to show up and just like let them fucking decimate because they ran through the classes.
What's not a good measure for your jiu-jitsu is inviting all the best guys to your little podcast studio and and pay them a bunch of money so they can get a black belt in 3 years.
Yeah. Well, it was 3.5, but he trained 3,000 hours.
Right.
Is what he said. Derek Moneyberg.
Yeah.
You know, the dead giveaway for me that it might be a little tomfoolery.
Mm.
It's the fact that he is wearing socks in every picture. Every picture, every like video of him rolling anything, he's wearing socks.
Have you seen how calloused Shanji's feet are from just like pressure passing?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's just par for the course. You gotta be bare feet.
Well, I've never seen anybody ever wear socks.
Yeah.
Have you?
It's kind of. I see that there's a new thing. Sanibel makes like a mat sock kind of thing. It's kind of like a yoga sock, which keeps your feet from getting mat burn, like on the top of them.
Yeah.
Which I could see like some people just don't want mat burn.
Or you just tape.
Or you just tape your feet or whatever. But at the same time, like, it's kind of like being a shoebie on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, just don't wear shoes on the beach.
Socks wearing, on the mat. Or wearing cut off jean shorts.
Yeah.
As swim trunks on a river. That's like when you see that, you know, like, so when I lived down in Clearwater Beach in Florida and Tampa, the first time I took my dog to the beach, there were these dudes that were all like wearing like cut off jean shorts that were these fucking rednecks with like these crazy pit bulls.
Yeah.
And I was like, these dudes like driving their trucks in the water, throwing beer cans at people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, these dudes are going to cause trouble. Sure enough, they did. And the cops showed up and fucking tased all these dudes.
Yeah.
And I'm always like,
those guys should visit Stockholm.
Yeah. Jean shorts. But the one interesting thing about jujitsu is it's not like, let's give you an example. So I took Jamie to go see Dr. Bueller recently, and Dr. Bueller's wife is a black belt in Taekwondo. So she's got to be in her 60s, but started training like 4 or 5 years ago and has a black belt. And I was like, oh man, that's pretty wild. Like, you know, you got a black belt that quick. And I don't know anything about the training. I've never seen her train. I don't know like the level of it. I just know that like a black belt in jujitsu in like 5 or 6 years. I mean, I think Gordon got his black belt in like 5 years. BJ Penn was 3 or 4. I mean, there's been a few outliers that have got it in a number of years, but I mean, those guys have also, didn't just get a black belt. They got like the black belt on like the podium. Like they went to worlds, they went to the deepest waters, they swam with people, you know, they showed up. I mean, they won ADCC finals. I mean, nobody who's getting a black belt in like 3, 4, 5 years is doing it without winning some massive fucking tournament.
BJ Penn, I think if he's not the first, I think he's one of the first gringo world champions.
Ahead of Lovato?
Yeah. Don't put me in that. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, he's the first American to win the IBJJF World Championships.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But he didn't win the whole Grand Slam, which shout out to Lovato. Yeah. He literally went out and he was like, that's what we're talking about. There's like many alleys to this thing. Like Lovato is the first guy to win every single title that's on, like every single Grand Slam title that's on offer.
And not just like do it within a few years, but he did it over generations.
Yeah.
Like it took him like, you know, I mean, he's what, like 42. I mean, he won his first one when he was in his 20s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just think of like the longevity he's had. I mean, he's been like a black belt. I mean, like he and Shanji have like so many stripes on their belts, but like that Moneyberg guy, like that's an interesting piece. There's only a few people who have ever attained a black belt that quickly. And those people got their black belts tied on like the world stage, you know, like BJ Penn goes up and they're like tying the belt around him, mm-hmm. like all after winning the world championship. So like those guys, and then he goes on and has a, you know, pretty incredible, you know, UFC career. So, I mean, the guy's a legit dude. So to have a guy that's never competed, and then also to like take that picture where like all those dudes are standing there and it's not clear who gave him the black belt. It just, it looks like tomfoolery.
It stinks a lot.
And the one interesting thing about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, especially the community of jiu-jitsu, is there's a lot of pettiness. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's more petty than Gordon and Craig Jones?
Yeah. I mean, you can't, it's so hard. Jiu-jitsu is so difficult.
Yeah.
So whenever somebody claims something in jiu-jitsu, it's like we all are in the same level of suffering. Right. So like we all understand what it means to be stuck on bottom mount. So if somebody is able to attain something faster than you and they've never, you know, been mother's milked by a 16-year-old Brazilian, it's like we get really pissed off. Right. Because this is a pursuit that's like one of the last pure pursuits on this planet Earth. Like even in fitness, right? There are a lot of people that shortcut fitness, right? They're
yeah.
you know, whether it's performance enhancing drugs like anabolic steroids or Ozempic, right?
Well, but even with those drugs, I don't know. I don't, you know, with the Ozempic, just because it's relatively new. But at the end of the day, even on drugs, you know, PEDs, you still have to put the work in.
True.
Like the one interesting thing about muscle and being in good shape is there's really no way to buy it. Now, there's ways to like make it a little bit easier, a little bit easier shortcut, but you still have to go out and lift the weights. You still got to do the work. You still got to do everything. Like years ago, we had Jay Cutler on the podcast.
Yeah.
And you know, we didn't get into the drug talk. I think it was right before he started his podcast. It was one of the first ones he's done. Now he has Cutler Cast, I think. So he was a little apprehensive. And if you notice, a lot of those old time kind of pro bodybuilders are very, very tight lipped when they talk about the drugs. Mm-hmm. And like, I kind of wanted to know a little bit, but just, you know, kind of ask him just because I'm always curious.
I think that came from the insecurity of losing
followers.
Supplement sponsorships. That was the big thing back in the day. Like you couldn't really talk about it. Like my personal story is I drank a ton of CellTech and MuscleTech because I thought I was going to turn into Jay Cutler. Right.
Well,
so yeah, there's a little bit.
So a little we bit had him on that. When we had him on the podcast, his deal came down to, it really came down to how much food I could consume.
Right.
Which is crazy to me. Like, you know, he was eating, I think, like six meals of like chicken and rice. I mean, like just like the amount of calories he was consuming, which I still have no concept of how he was able to turn all of that into muscle. I mean, obviously, like the drugs, I mean, he trained his fucking ass off. But what's wild is that his training never changed. 4 sets of 10. Mm-hmm. He just did 4 sets of 10. He did the same training program over and over again. It wasn't the training. He said it wasn't the drugs. And it was the food, and it really came down to if he could consume enough food. The aerobic work they did, Stairmaster. So he did Stairmaster twice a day for 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that was like his secret, and that's how he did it. He'd get up first thing in the morning, 45 minutes on the step mill, and then at night, 45 minutes step mill, and then he would consume like 7,000 calories. Like that seemed, and if you hear him now, he's like, yeah, like I am so just disgusted. Over food. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame him. I think where people draw criticism from the world is when they jump on a soapbox, you know, and they take shortcuts. Like the internet is really quick nowadays. It's like if you want to jump on a soapbox, you better come correct.
Well,
we'll figure out a way to take you off of that box.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book. It's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Well, I mean, with the Moneybird guy, the problem is he posted that pictograph or whatever, that like informational with him with the black belt and his guys, and he's got the socks on. Mm-hmm. And then he like posts like, you
he's
know,
he's got the socks on. That's, yeah. That's so funny.
Black belt in 3.5 years, 3,000 hours. So he was like trying to put the receipts in there.
Yeah.
The problem with jiu-jitsu is there's only one receipt. Right? Like you got to show up and actually like roll with some people and have like somebody who's.
You have to go to class, my friend.
Yeah. You got to have somebody show up. Like, yeah. Like if all of a sudden he shows up at Six Blades and yeah. gets into a class and, you know, Shanji's there and Shanji's like, oh, we have a new black belt here.
Yeah.
Derek Moneybird. Let's see. Okay. We're going to put you in the gauntlet and yeah. then see how he fucking fares.
Just bring a random blue belt that knows nothing but crab walk, smash.
Or you bring in some kid from Manaus, you know, or like, you know, I mean, some of the guys are, or you know, let's say you have a guy like Victor Hugo show up that
day. Yeah.
And next thing you know, you have, you know, a 6'4", 265-pound Brazilian who's got a really slick, fucking dangerous type of jiu-jitsu.
Oh, man. And he's never even really using all of it.
No, I was
That's the worst part is like when he uses all of it, I think Steve Hargett mentioned it to us one day. He's like, dude, do you know that like none of us would survive if Victor used all of his jiu-jitsu? Like we wouldn't survive a session. Like some days he just doesn't even need to use all of it, you know, and that's a scary thought. That's a scary thought. So
he's a savant.
He's a savant. Yeah.
I mean, Philippe too.
Yeah. But yeah. I do think the reason why Victor's such a good coach, and it's a sign of somebody who's a good coach in any discipline, is that you have struggles early on and then you're able to communicate and relate back to people who have similar struggles. I think the people that are the worst coaches are the ones that have all the natural gifts. Mm. So they never had to work through issues. Right.
Well, that's why a lot of professional athletes are terrible coaches.
Right.
I always go back to, and I've told this story on the podcast, I'm sure, but the story of Ted Williams, you know, one of the greatest hitters in professional baseball. Ted Williams, after he retired, they brought him in as a hitting coach. Mm-hmm. And so the guys get up there and he's, you know, the pitcher's throwing the ball. And as the pitcher's throwing the ball, he's calling the pitch. And he's like, curve, the minute it leaves his hand. And these guys are like not doing it. And he's like kind of gets pissed at him and is like, hey, how come you can't see what the pitch is? And the guys are like, how are you calling these pitches? He's like, because I can see the rotation of the laces. And they like looked at him and he's like, you guys can't see the rotation of like, you can't see the laces as soon as it leaves his hand. And they're like
0.2 seconds or however long it takes for the pitch to get there.
He could see the minute that the ball left the guy's hand, he could read the pitch based on the rotation of the laces. Mm. So he had, you know, God given ability to like slow whatever. Mm-hmm. And see that rotation, and he could come, and that was how he hit it. And so, trying to teach somebody something that is so innate and so gifted is next to impossible. So, he wasn't a great hitting coach because he had a certain skill set that nobody else had. I think in the jiu-jitsu world, very, very true in the same way. But I think for Victor, what I really love is Victor's style of jiu-jitsu, you know, very, you know, Salo and Shanji and Six Blades. You know, a lot of guard retention, and he's gotten very far. But since he's gone out and started training with the B team and, you know, Nicky Rod and these guys and learned a little bit of their style, now I've seen him move more than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They posted that clip the other day of him at practice. And, like, he was, did not stop, kept moving, grabbed the guy here. I mean, just incredible.
Dude, they do round. Like, I've gotten the chance. Victor has brought me over. As a Make-A-Wish kid, you know, to go train there too. And I understand now why you have to move so much, because the rounds are so long. They're like 10, 15 minute rounds, and which mirrors the competitive demand, right? Like the matches are usually 10 minutes long at minimum. And then some of them can go to 15 minutes, right? With this new format of 3 5-minute rounds, that CGI kind of pioneered. But, if the round gets that long, then a lot of jiu-jitsu gets kind of washed away because of sweat, right? Mm-hmm. So you actually have to move, otherwise you lose position, right? Which is an interesting piece, right? That's another lane you can start going down in jiu-jitsu, where it's like, hey, things are moving much faster. I have to figure out a way. If this doesn't work, I gotta have my next path carved out.
Well, I mean, that's also no gi.
Right.
In the gi, it's much slower. Mm-hmm. Just because you don't have that slickness and you have a lot of friction and like there's a lot
grips.
of grips. But I do know, I mean, there's just, you know, when we've done no gi, especially when you get real sweaty, you can just kind of like you get stuck in a position, you just fucking forward roll out of it. You slip out of things. Yeah. and you just start kind of just keep moving.
Yeah. It brings me back to the Moneyberg thing, but also just sports in general or any kind of pursuit. Do you need to have a competition or a challenge to be a reflection of the things that you do? Or, you know, can you come up with that on your own? Is creating a challenge for yourself necessarily the most important thing? Because I'm kind of struggling with this idea, because I teach kids, right? Mm-hmm. And it feels like there is like a competition culture in youth athletics, where it's like if they don't have a competition to, challenge themselves or rise to the occasion of, then it's hard for them to create a marker of their progress.
Well, there's a really great quote by Seneca that says, a gem cannot be polished without friction, not a man perfected without trials. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're going to compete at something or you're going to train for something, there needs to be some form of competition. Mm-hmm. Something that Philippe and I have gotten really deep about talking about is the difference between being good in the gym and being good in contest. So playing pro football, I played with a lot of guys who were great in practice. But you put on the game unis, you put them under the lights, and all of a sudden, they didn't move as they should. There's a certain speed that you have in practice. And when you go to the game on Sunday, there's like another gear, and it's pretty easy to see whether or not certain people have it. And I remember seeing guys that were great in practice, and everybody's like, man, this guy's great. Training camp, he's going to be good. All of a sudden, you go out the first game, and he can't get to that extra gear. He can't move at the speed he needs to. He can't do all the little things. And there were just gamers, and there were guys that were good in practice. And I've talked to Philippe about this extensively. I'm like, if your best roles are in practice, we have a problem. And he brought up, I forgot the guy's name, but I guess the guy's, you know, incredibly very successful in competition. And when he talked to one of the training partners, they're like, he gets smashed in practice. The reason I think that happens, and I also told them, is when we go, and I see this all the time at practice. Don was a class example of this. He had a few moves that he felt very comfortable with, and he did those moves, and he did them very well. And he would kind of get to a position in submission, and it felt very storybooked. Mm-hmm. Like I knew that if I was on top, or if I was on the bottom and he was on here, he was going to do this. And like, it was almost like if this, then that, like I knew what was going to come and I knew what his couple moves were. So then you start kind of going against it. What I've tried to do is I do this even too when I roll, like if I get to a submission and it's an easy submission, I don't want to do the, you know, I mean, I can just get somebody inside control and paper cutter them.
Catch and release kind of fishing.
Yeah. You know? But like, I always want to try to get to like a different position. I want to be in a different one. And even if all of a sudden, like the guy can't, like, let's say I'm on top and I can't, you know, the guy can't get me in a position, I'll just roll over and pull him on top and see if I can get back. Just because I feel like and I've seen this a lot with guys, like guys have one move, you know, like John Walsh will get on the bottom, kind of play half guard coyote, and then does that move over and over again. And it's his move, to the point where we get into the position and I'm like, oh, here we go again. Yeah. Whereas that's what his comfort zone is. But at the end of the day, if I know I have that, I don't need to keep proving it. I need to continue to push myself to do new things.
Yeah. I think the reason I want to ask it is also for people who have general fitness goals or body composition goals, right? Do you think that they need a challenge, or is it a need, or is it much better to have like is Hammer 90 going to be a kind of challenge? Is that what's up? So I feel like a Hammer 90 would spur a lot of people to rise to the occasion. Right?
Yeah. Something like Hammer 90 would be great. Just because then it's like, you know, 3 months on the sprint and there's a goal. I mean, kind of similar to what we're doing. Like, if you don't have an end date, but this is also comes back to another issue. You know, like obviously we're doing something like this and there's a kind of a start and a finish, but I think you have to have a plan for when it ends. Mm. So when we did 22 Jack Street, I ended up hitting that and winning and, you know, crushed the body comp. And then we ended up leaving that next day and I took, the kids to Hawaii. And we went over there and like hang out on the beach and we drank some Mai Tais and we went out and we had like a lot of fun. I didn't necessarily have a plan in place for after 22 Jack Street and then just kind of slip back into it. So I think being able to kind of hit this, be pretty happy with where you kind of finish up and then realizing like, all right, am I going to try to keep this body weight? Am I going to try to do something? Like, what does this look like? I'm not going to be, I am not want to be ever be a slave to a scale. So I always kind of go based on how my clothes are fitting or how I feel physically. The one thing that Skutnik brought up is like, it's pretty amazing. You end up dumping 10, 15 pounds of fat, just the loss of systemic inflammation from just having an excess body fat, like waking up in the morning, I feel so much better. So I feel better, lighter. So I think there's probably going to be like a little bit of maintenance and then I want to try to drop some more pounds.
Yeah.
So, but the interesting one that Skutnik and I were rapping a little bit about, he's like, you know, you realize to like, to really drop some pounds, you're going to have to drop some fucking mass. Yeah. He's like, he's like, dude, it's really expensive. Like for you to be like a 250, he's like, it's going to be really hard for you to be 230, 240 pounds of fucking muscle.
Yeah.
And he's like, so you're going to have to burn through it or you're just going to have to be happy to be 265 to, you know?
Yeah. You know, The Rock, he started out really heavy when he came out of, WWE. Mm-hmm. And then he started getting really shredded and he lost a bunch of weight and people are like, why was he doing that? And then I think somebody had commented, I think it was like a Facebook comment. They're like, yeah, well on screen being 290 pounds, like really big, doesn't look as good as being 250 pounds shredded, right? Because you can't exactly see.
Well, you see, he looks ridiculous now.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was watching that, I think it was Red or one of those movies that he was in.
Red One.
Yeah.
Really great movie, by the way. It's a blockbuster.
He's what, like 270, 280?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what's his name? Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
I was listening to him. You know, he was probably around 300 when he was in the WWE, and now he's down to like 250, 245.
Traps to his ears.
Yeah. He was fucking on Jack Street. But he was talking about what he's had to do to get down in that weight. And I'm thinking it was like a vegan diet. Mm-hmm. He's like, there was no way for me to like eat a high protein, high steak kind of carnivore or, you know, just that higher deal. But, you know, we had Sean Baker on the podcast. There's two things that have always fascinated me. So years ago when I ended up getting diagnosed with brain damage on my left side after that Amen study and ended up, you know, getting clicked in with Matt Lalonde and we did, you know, that year long ketogenic diet. The way that I did keto is I'm rotated through different proteins. There was fish, there was chicken, there was turkey. And then even when I ate the leaner meats, like let's say like a turkey or a chicken, I supplemented with like monounsaturated fats and basically ate no carbs for this year. After having Sean Baker on the podcast, I realized, I was like, man, I wish I had just done a carnivore diet because I actually really enjoy eating meat. And if I just get to eat steaks every day, this would have been a way, way easier because trying to eat like chicken and turkey and then supplement with fat was just a fucking nightmare. But I think that's a pretty interesting one. I don't know, just because I've never done a pure carnivore diet, even though during COVID for like the first 3 weeks of lockdown, I ate ground beef and protein shakes. That's all I had. I had like 2 to 3 pounds of ground beef because we had a freezer full and we didn't know how long things were going to last.
Yeah.
So I had all these protein shakes. So it was like 2 pounds of ground beef and a protein shake. And that's all I ate for like 3 weeks. And
did everybody else eat that in the house?
No. I forgot what they were eating, but that's what I was eating. And because we had like, you know, a whole cow in the freezer. And yeah. I was like, well, I'm just going to see how long I can go on protein shakes and ground beef. But the other one is fasting. So, you know, all the research is pretty conclusive that there's no physiological difference between caloric restriction and fasting. I just thought fasting was a fun way to do caloric restriction, except when you start getting into like extended fasting. And I know there's people that advocate like a 72-hour fast to do it every kind of so often. I think that's an interesting piece, especially if you, you know, want to pull that kind of diet lever. If you're trying to like, you know, you're a big dude, like let's say like a Bautista who was jacked at fucking 290 and he's trying to get down.
You're gonna kickstart something.
You got to almost starve yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not a fan of like, you know, supermodel diets where you're like starving yourself every day, but maybe just like, you know, not eating for 3 days might make some sense.
I haven't tried a 72-hour yet.
I've done 72 hours.
How is that?
I've only did it when I got sick though. Mm-hmm. I remember I was sick one time. And I kind of just laid and I was like super laid up. I forgot what I got hit with and I didn't eat for like 3 days. And then I got up and I actually felt pretty good. And I was like, oh shit, I'm super lean.
Yeah.
I went to Boss Rutan's birthday.
The Monday party?
Yeah.
The Monday.
Yeah. On Monday. Yeah, yeah. It was crazy. Kevin James was there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I got to meet Kevin James. And
I love Boss's role in his movie, Here Comes the Boom.
Yeah.
He plays like that really weird European dude. And then they're watching his highlight like, ooh, twisty. That was my favorite part of the whole movie.
So Kevin James was telling us a story about him fasting for 40 days.
What?
Yeah, so he didn't eat. Yeah, he fasted 40
days. He got
days.
Really big. Like at
well,
one
he's
point.
Still big.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, so like he was talking about like he didn't eat, you know, I think it was like a, he's a Catholic. Maybe it was a religious thing, but he didn't eat for 40 days. And then when he got done, he broke the fast and he started eating. And he didn't do it intelligently and ended up in the hospital because I guess he overate and got sick. But he's still a heavy dude. Mm-hmm. And like, he's like, oh, I did this fasting for 40 days. And I'm like, well, shit, like. Did it help?
Did it help?
I mean, you proved yourself you could do it. And not that I want to fast for 40 days, but I think, you know, periodically doing some fasting might make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to not do well when I fast. Like I know when we do our Sunday fast, I tend to like fucking overeat. And
it was much easier to do the Sunday fast you gave me when I was single.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you add somebody else into your life.
Yeah.
And I don't want anybody around me. I'm like.
Well, you start getting really like. So this is another one is I listened to a bunch of these different kind of guys like on YouTube that were going into fasting. And they'll go fast for like 3 or 5 days and they continue to do all their cardio. They continue to lift and do all their work.
Lovato.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it. Like I get up, I would do all my aerobic work and whatever. And by like, you know, I'd eaten the night before and by 24 hours later, at like 5 or 6, dude, I am absolutely like on a fucking hunt to eat everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Lovato just did a big long fast I saw.
Yeah. And like we were talking about this a lot, which is you get into these periods of like heavy dieting or like focused training. And then all you want to think about is food. That's all you think about is food and when you can get your next meal. And like, if somebody has, you have a trip planned for the weekend, you're like, all right, where are we going to eat? And that's like the second thought I have, which I'm like, what's better? Just like live a balanced life where it's like, yeah, I just don't eat like a prick, you know? And I can kind of eyeball what I'm eating.
Yeah.
And then I get to look at the scale maybe once a week and see what's going on. But and I don't want to think about food all the time. I have other fish to fry.
You know, I mean, that makes a case for the GLP-1s.
Right.
So one of the interesting pieces that I've heard over and over again is this idea of food noise, mm-hmm. where you always have this idea of like food noise in the back of the head. And like, I had Matt Vincent on the podcast recently, and that's something we talked about. He's like, you know, cause he was a massive dude and he's since have like trimmed down. I mean, fucking what an amazing Looks transformation. Great. But he was saying, he's like, you know, I still have that food noise. My wife has it. Mm-hmm. She's like, I think about food constantly. And she's like, I wish I could like unshackle myself from this. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily have food noise, but I definitely know on like the Sunday fast after I train by like 5 o'clock, like I've already planned it in my head. And I wish that we could unshackle that where like I didn't necessarily have to think about it or worry about it.
John, on the drive over here, I was already thinking about us getting in that sauna and like what we're going to eat. How am I going to get this sourdough pizza from Cedar Park all the way here? Maybe it's better if we just make a picanha. You know?
also a great idea. If you think about from like a evolutionary standpoint, like the desire to feed yourself probably drove people to a lot of things that they probably normally wouldn't have done, like the idea of hunger. So it's such a powerful thing. But now we live in this world of abundance, which we probably have never really been in, except maybe for the last 100 years. Through the entirety of our evolution, there's been this like focused idea of like, I need to get up and I need to kill something so I can eat and then probably reproduce.
Mm.
And those two drives to like, you know, reproduce and bang and
yeah.
eat. Have driven humanity for the last, you know, millions of years. But like, you know, we've never lived in this idea of abundance. Right. And now we live in this world of abundance and we're not wired for this. So I think for people that live with that constant food noise, something like the GLP-1s make a lot of sense. And I know they, those things take a lot of hate, but if it can remove that, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Or is it more important to always be hungry so you have something to strive for?
I think being hungry all the time makes you kind of a psycho. I really do.
I'm laughing only because I agree.
Yeah. But like it makes me I was listening to a guy in the fasting deal. Like I kind of got stuck, you know, went down the rabbit hole on all these YouTube with this fasting. But this guy's like, you know, every week I do a 72-hour fast. And he's like, it's so amazing. It frees me of this stuff. I get so much work done and everything. I'd be like, I would be obsessively standing at the coffee machine.
Yeah.
And I would be like trying to 3 days, like the fact that this guy could unshackle himself. But I'll tell you, when the interesting thing, and like I think about like protein and that carnivore, it's extremely satiating.
Right.
Like if you were to sit down and eat like 2 ribeyes a day, like you're probably not hungry. But if I eat 12 ounces of chicken and 9 ounces of white rice with a little bit of honey on top, I'm hungry. I'm literally finishing that, take a breath, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so much more hungry.
Yeah.
Like rice with a little bit of honey and chicken, like that meal, I could eat that meal every 2 hours like Jay Cutler did.
Yeah.
Like you sit down and you eat like 2 massive ribeyes, like you're probably not going to be hungry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely protein and fat are satiating. Like the one, you know, and obviously we've talked about this with the sugar diet, Mark Bell's sugar diet.
Yeah.
The constant, I'm hungry from eating that much sugar and no fat, I don't think I would do well at all in that deal. Just for the fact that would make me like never feel full. I would never be satiated. I would never feel content. Which makes me wonder if, like, you know, there's some GLP-1s in that whole thing, because if you're eating bananas, sweet fruit, honey, and like all and like candy, like in my mind, like that's a bottomless pit. Like I know when I did the anabolic diet years ago with Marl, we would do, you know, obviously it was no carb, like 30 grams of carbs during the week, which is basically just like whatever's in the vegetables, and then it was protein and fat. And then, you know, come Saturday and Sunday, we would flip the script, and it was like lean protein, like chicken or fish, and then just nothing but carb. But the difference was, it wasn't like fast carbs. It wasn't sugar carbs. Mm. It was like starchy carbs. It was rice. It was pasta. It was pizza. It was any carb that I wanted. And I think I've told the story. I remember the first carb refeed we did, I went to this Italian spot, and I must have eaten like 3 or 4 pounds of pasta, and I had a pizza, and I was sweating so bad that the guy thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was cold out, but I mean, I was literally drenched. But I like, they brought this like massive thing of pasta bolognese, and like I had 3 of those. It must have easily been 3 pounds of just pasta, a massive pizza for myself. And then I think I had some dessert, but like it was bottomless pit. Yeah. If you gave me and said, hey, you can eat as many bananas, as much, you know, sweet fruit as you want, as much honey and just all of these carbs, like I don't know if I would ever feel content, and every hour I would just be smashing this stuff.
Yeah. I tried the sugar diet for 16 hours.
Oh, how'd it go?
Like you just said, I was sweating profusely.
Do you feel like you like leaned out or?
No, I had that exact feel. I was wired, had a lot of energy, but I needed to eat every 2 hours. Like I started it off with like 3 bananas in the morning, and then I did a pack of Sour Patch Kids, and then I had some fruit juice before kids class, and then afterwards I was like, after the kids class, I was so burnt out. I was like, I need to eat some meat. Like, right. I was like, and then I ate some meat at the end of the day and I felt just fine. But that first 16 hours was like frantic, sweating, couldn't wait for my next meal. Did not respond well to that.
How's Marty done? I haven't talked to him.
I haven't really talked to him in a while either. I was like gone for the trip, and then We didn't get to train together. We didn't get to connect. And then now he's
doing his Mount Everest deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know the specifics of that, but,
I know he was doing the sugar diet.
He's kind of, he's approached it as like a weekend thing. Mm. So he kind of eats regular throughout the week, or he just meal preps his food. And then his go-to is like chicken thighs, rice, lean ground beef. And then, on the weekends he'll do like this sugar fast thing. But, I haven't really checked in, so I can't really respond to that. But
yeah, I know Mark's gone all in on this.
Yeah.
And he's doing great. But I mean, he was also lean before. So yeah. We did an article write up on the mechanism for that. I'm pretty interested to see how that goes. But I think all this goes back to is what works for you as an individual. If this works for Mark, then it works for him. I don't know what the long-term diet implications are. I mean, but also I remember when Sean Baker first went on Joe Rogan and was talking about eating nothing but meat, you know, Rogan's like, have you got your blood work done? What are long-term implications? So like, there's these ideas that somehow, because these guys push out, like, is it all meat or is it all sugar?
Yeah.
And the thing I go back to, and probably because I have a son who's type 1 diabetic, there's no outcome in my house that looks like a high sugar environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do a little bit of carb. I mean, I do, like, Kate and I are pretty low carb because of Cash. The girls are a little bit more carby. But for the most part, like, it's not as if we're in there, like, you know, like, we do have some chips and a few little things, but like, I don't really eat those. And like, if I, you know, like, I've been eating rice. So I cook my rice, I put it in, I portion it out, and I put it in the refrigerator. But it's not like we eat cereal or we're going through and crushing all these different carbs. But for the most part, I feel that a balanced diet is probably the best way to approach.
I'll even go further to say that it's probably community driven is going to be the way that you stay on a diet or you adhere to a diet, right? Is if everybody around you is eating like crap, you're most likely going to eat like crap. If you have,
I got stuck eating smash burgers last night.
Yeah. But also, if you come from a cult, easy now.
No. I was like, man, I can feel it.
Listen, that was the funniest thing. I came in, we were going to go do a lift. And I was like, hey, John, you're looking really lean.
And I did the Lovato.
Yeah, you did the Lovato. You flashed your shirtless a little bit. And then Kate comes over and she's like, yeah, but for some reason, he can't lose this. And then she grabs a handful of your back. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, she's ruthless.
It's come down significantly.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I grabbed her on her thighs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You got her back.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's going to come down to culture and community. It's like if you surround yourself with a culture of people that are eating a diet that's nutrient dense and satiating and gets you to your goals, that's going to be ultimately the thing that keeps you on the path to wherever you want to get to. But if you surround yourself with a culture of people, or, you know, it's a little bit harder, but a family of people that eats a certain way, then it's going to be really difficult to adhere to it. Sure. I mean, here in Texas, I think the prevailing food culture is probably like barbecue and breakfast tacos and like, you know, luckily, like, there are a lot of barbecue options that are leaner. Like, you could go get a smoked turkey or something like that.
Sure.
And you can be really active here in Austin. But if you're from an environment that, I'm trying to think of what's the sloppiest city in America?
New Orleans.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. New Orleans was voted, I think, the fattest city in America. Okay. And if anybody's ever been to New Orleans, the food is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you go down on the, the French Quarter. I mean, you're talking about like po' boys and all of these like amazing foods in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, they also have drive-through daiquiri stands. They got beignets. They got all of the good stuff.
Yeah. So it's all the good stuff, right? But we're also not doing all the good work anymore. So we kind of need to shift ourselves a little bit, be a little bit Swedish, be a little bit more Italian. I love the Italians because like, they'll just straight up look at you and be like, Maba. Why you eat like this? You know, like, you go back for seconds, like, you're so hungry. Why? We're going to eat lunch. We're going to eat dinner. Like, you know, like, they will just be like, why are you drinking cappuccino? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Well, isn't cappuccino a morning thing?
It's a morning thing. Right. So it's like, you don't get it in that. Right. And the culture is very strict. So I think a little bit of, you got to do a little bit of culture crafting in your own life to find the people that'll allow you to adhere to a diet that's actually good for you.
Sure.
So I think that's the hardest piece, because it all comes down to people. And you got to surround yourself with the right people.
Kind of like Derek Moneyberg.
Yeah. Surround yourself with champions.
Did for somebody who's got a brown belt, who's striving for a black belt.
And I've been acting like it, wrestler Matt.
Is it hard for you to see somebody who got a black belt in 3.5 years?
Specifically Derek Moneyberg, yes, because I don't know his grappling experience before that, if he was a wrestler or not. But I've also been around people who, I've been objectively better at jiu-jitsu that have gotten black belts. But at the same time, I understand the merits of what a black belt is. It's much more than just technical proficiency.
Yeah.
It also comes down to consistency and the way you carry yourself as a person.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the intangibles, the intangible part of jiu-jitsu. It's not necessarily about, are you a world champion? But also, are you a champion to the people around you? Are you a champion to everybody in the academy and outside? Are you a liability to your own people? You don't want to give a black belt to somebody that just smashes everybody in the gym. That's not indicative of somebody who deserves a black belt. I would say it's more important to who you are as a person to be a black belt, as well as some technical proficiency. But I don't think you don't need to be a world champion to be a black belt. Mm. You got to be kind of a black belt in real life, which is up to the professor to kind of, culture craft and see what it really means to be somebody who's deserving of the rank.
Yeah. I feel there's a lot of attitude lately for people that are why are they giving black belts to these guys in their 50s and 60s?
Who give?
But if you think about your ability to be able to teach, I think there's two types of perception. There's an idea that a black belt means something. And when I think of the black belt, I think of more of somebody who instructs and teaches. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine getting a black belt and not being an instructor or teaching in some capacity.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I view it is for you guys who are, training to open your gyms and you guys are actively teaching and educating people in the art form of jiu-jitsu, those people earn black belts. I was I can't imagine being just a hobbyist who goes into just jiu-jitsu and gets to a point where you get a black belt and not actually teaching it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of I think it was John Danaher was on Lex Fridman and he asked him, he's like, what do you think of a black belt? And don't hold yourself that short. If your only idea is to get a black belt because you feel that's some imaginary marker, he's like, I know plenty of shitty black belts. Mm-hmm. I also know some amazing, blue belts and purple belts and brown belts who are not black belts, but will destroy those guys. So don't limit yourself in that way. I view it as people who are actively teaching. Mm-hmm. And these are the instructors and they should hold themselves to a higher standard.
So it is the fundamental idea of Jitai Kyohei, which comes from Jigoro Kano's founding of judo, which is there's mutual welfare and benefit. So as somebody who's a member of judo or somebody, a member of society, you should always be striving to share what the knowledge that you have. So if you're fundamentally unable to share the knowledge that you have, and be a positive force in your community, then you're undeserving.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Somebody who's selfish and can't contribute back to it, then you don't deserve a black belt, I don't think.
So if Moneyberg opens his own gym, are you going to go there and roll?
He might be the only modern day dojo storm that happens if he does. there are going to be so many people signing up for a trial class. They're just going to go there and wreck his shit. He'll have to hide. He won't be able to teach a class.
Yeah. You're like, hey, I'd like to do a trial.
Oh, dude, yeah.
I love those videos of first day. Yeah. The guy, first day.
Comes first in. Day, first day. Yeah.
Us.
Us. Us. Yeah.
Oh God, that poor guy. He brought it on himself.
Yeah,
he did. If he had just quietly got a black belt and started wearing it and doing whatever he did, nobody would have noticed. But because he made it so Like, and those guys all reminded me of girls on boats. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever you see these girls like on these like bitching like cigarette boats, like there's, you know, like you always want to know who's on the other side of the camera. It's a bunch of like fat old dudes and girls like, like, yeah, I felt like those guys are up there and they're like, oh my God, I needed this money so bad. This check is going to cash.
Yeah. Oh shit.
I mean, and Frank Mir is a fucking bad dude. He used to work the door in Vegas at a strip club. And like while he was competing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a fucking bad dude. So I'm kind of surprised a little bit, but who knows, man? I mean, I've never seen the guy. Where, you know, Victor sent us some videos. He didn't look real agile. Mm-hmm. He didn't look like what I would expect somebody who was, you know, training to that level. I mean, if you're training every single day for 3 hours for the world's best people nonstop for 3.5 hours, or sorry, for three, it was what, 3 years, 3 hours a day without, or 3.5 years, 3 hours a day without missing a single day is what it worked out to be. If you're training that level, you're really fucking slick.
Yeah. So I would, you know, I give him the benefit of the doubt and say that, all right, now your responsibility is to give back some way. Let's see how much you give back once you get your black belt. Because in reality, if you attain any level of mastery in whatever you do, you're only going to be as good as whoever you produce after you. You know, like the idea of creating shade for or planting a tree whose shade you will never.
You know, a society's great when old men plant trees and shade they'll never sit in.
There you go.
He actually trained with Gordon Ryan.
Oh,
so there were some videos of him with Gordon. Oddly enough, Gordon did not step up and say, "Hey, no, this guy's legit." So he didn't really have anybody like that. I think what he needs to do is reach out to Craig Jones. And bring in Craig and basically just be like, all right, we're going to set up a little kumite with me and Greg Jones.
So Craig did post something. He posted like a very cryptic thing on his Instagram of like, hey, it was like sometime in April. Like, hey, are you going to be in Austin April 18th? A buddy of mine would like to pay for your time to come out. And like, he posted that on his Instagram.
Oh.
Yeah. He didn't specifically mention this guy. But it seemed very, he's like, yeah, he's willing to pay like $2,500 for you to come out. Da, 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 da. So I think it was directed at Moneyberg, but like.
Well, I feel like Craig is the type of guy to basically go in and give you the receipts. I mean, if Craig Jones goes in there, because the fact that he did all of those seminars and then at the end let people live roll with him. And he's like, hey, if you fucking fuck with me, I'm going to break your fucking arm.
Yeah.
And he fucking snapped dude's arms. That was some savage shit.
I think he's just a rational dude that's just like, hey, man, like, I don't have time for this bullshit. Like, I'm just going to call it as I see it. You know, he's got high blood pressure. His time is limited on this earth. Like, he's just like, dude, I'm just going to ride this till the wheels fall off. But if anybody comes at me with shit that stinks, I'm going to tell him.
Yeah.
You know, that, and, you know, John, I'll tell you what. You've always done that for me. And I really do appreciate it. And that's why I find you to be such a great friend and a good mentor, is you've always told me my shit stinks, even when I didn't want it to. So,
yeah, that's the interesting thing about one, growing up in my family, but also with playing football and that. Like, I felt like there was in the NFL, a lot of guys got a lot of hand jobs.
Yeah.
That were undeserving. And there was a lot of glad handing and this and this. And the one thing I did appreciate about offensive line and a lot of guys is they called spades a spade.
Right.
And I feel like as you get farther and farther into this, you know, social media and fitness world, there's a lot of like, you know, a lot of that, because, you know, what receipts do people have anymore?
Yeah.
And the one thing that I've really enjoyed about jiu-jitsu is that there's no way to snowball it. Like, yeah, you got to come to class, you got to roll, you got to do this, you got to be, you know, you got, and if you're not, like the mats don't lie.
Yeah. And neither does your wattage on the Echo bike.
It's another thing you can't.
That's why I've really been enjoying Skutnik's Build the Base, because, yeah, I'm like, dude, the wattage doesn't lie.
Yeah.
And then David McKercher, first one to call you out for using an Aerodyne bike instead of an Echo. I'm like, did I join the first day? And MCK is just like, somebody get this guy an Echo bike. I'm like posting my wattage. He's like,
So we, one of the workouts, and I didn't do it yesterday. I'm probably going to do it today. In the Eat the Weakness, we have that 150 kettlebell swings for time.
Yeah.
So I've been messing with it, and I've gotten to the point where, like, I'm pretty comfortable, like, right around 6-7 minutes on the swings.
Yeah.
So the idea was 150 swings at a 106 and then 50 calories on the Echo in sub 10 minutes. and Skutnik did it in like just
744.
Yeah. And but he didn't use an Echo. He used a watt bike. And then the hilarious part is Hunter Waldman comes in and he's like, you know, he's like, I've seen Skutnik swings. He shorts them. And so we were joking that Skutnik's been short dicking his swings opposed to long dicking it. And so he posted a video. And then all we did is we were just taking screen caps of the kettlebell at the bottom. We're like, this is him at full extension.
Yeah.
So the thing about it is
petty athlete.
Yes.
That's what it is. Petty athlete.
Yes. Petty tyranny, as I brought up the other day. It is petty tyranny. Because he crushed it. That means that he would have had, because 400 watts on the Echo is about 20 calories a minute. So if you ride for 2 minutes at 400 watts, you get 40 calories. So I figured I could get off the swings. As long as I got off the swings in like seven and change, it would take me roughly like 2 minutes and 30 seconds riding at a good clip to be able to hit those 50 calories. So I'm like, all right, so 7.5 minutes on the swings. And then he comes in at 744. And I was like, fuck this fucking guy. Yeah, I got to fucking go and try to beat this one.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's end it there, dude. Yeah. Thanks for coming on Power Athlete Radio as usual, amigo. And hopefully we'll see you on the other side of this. And thanks for tuning in to another episode. See ya.
See ya.
Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by kofi.com/powerathlete. And toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.